Hi everyone, and welcome to The Other Room. My name is Orelu Aleshi, or Ore as my friends and family call me. The Other Room is a podcast that features conversations with exceptional African women who are defining and redefining their roles in life. These are women who are charting their work and life journeys with purpose. We will look at their career trajectory, the challenges they have had along the way, and the things they have learned on the path to where they are now. I hope that my guest stories will help reaffirm that you are where you are meant to be, and if not, will encourage you to make important decisions about your next steps. My guest today is Omozo Ogurombi. She's the CEO and co-founder of All Naturals Beauty Nigeria Limited. She's a L'Oreal trained and certified professional hairdresser. She has over 18 years experience working in the financial services industry in Canada, the United Kingdom, and Nigeria combined. Omozo co-founded All Naturals with her sisters in 2009, and she has contributed to the visibility, growth, and development of the natural hair industry in Nigeria. Welcome, Omozo. Welcome, Omozo. Thank you so much for coming to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Ore. I appreciate it.
Okay. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today. So we can start with, can you tell us about your childhood? What it was like growing up? Where you grew up? What kind of girl were you? What your interests and your hobbies were?
I grew up in Lagos, Nigeria. Born and raised in Lagos. So I'm a Lagosian. And I am the middle child, if that means anything to anybody. Because they tell us there's a middle child syndrome where you are always trying to, you're trying to find your way. You're not the first, you're not the last, you're not the first girl, you're not the last girl, you're just smack in the middle. I remember when I was in secondary school, my dad sent me this card. My father, I don't know where he gets these greeting cards from, but anyway, he always has this stash of cards. And he sent me a card. And in the card, it said that the middle of the body is where you find your heart. The middle of the car is where you find the engine. The best part of the sandwich is in between the bread. And our family wouldn't be as great without you in between. Imagine, I forget. I remember that.
So that's so sweet.
It really, really, really is. And it would always sign mom and dad anyway. So I think that... from a young age, my parents did well in making us realize that we are unique, but we are also part of a team, and that we had to work together as a team, even though we are unique and different, and we had different times we arrived in the family. So that I think... words like that, as well as actions mostly, really gave me confidence. And I don't think there was ever a time, or even now, where I thought I can't do something. So when I was smaller, I think I would say I was a bit adventurous. I think, in my mind, I mean, I guess if you ask my siblings and my parents, they might say differently. But I think I was adventurous with... just with life, you know, and as children now, you really don't have much worries anyway. You know, you're not worrying about food or money or anything like that. It's play, eat, read your books, sleep, and that. So, I mean, there were things I did that I got punished for. and then, of course, there were things I did that I didn't get punished for. So I think I was a bit adventurous. I think I was and still am very friendly. So you have uncles and aunties who my parents said that time would always remember. They would always ask, how is Omozo? And you know, because when people would come, I would ask them how they are and if they wanted anything to drink and all of that. I don't know if that was innate or if that was just upbringing. So I don't know about that. But I enjoyed reading, but I wasn't like an avid reader like my older sister. You know, I had an older sister and I wanted to be like her. As she ran very fast and she was just so intelligent. She still is very intelligent. Like if I have any general knowledge questions or life questions or issues, I always would talk to my sister. So she read a lot, and so because I wanted to be like her, I would read. So, but I don't know if I was that interested in reading everything. I don't know if that makes sense. I was interested in books and in the information, but not so much, you know, page to page and all of those things. So I'm very grateful I took a speed reading class at a certain point. So that made it quite easy. But I enjoyed playing. I would like to play. I didn't enjoy kitchen. So sometimes when, well, most times when my mom and, you know, other siblings would be in the kitchen, I would go and entertain. So I would sing, I would dance, I would tell stories, I would make up all these stories. And when my mom got tired of it, she said, okay, come here and pick melon. Picking melon, if anybody knows, melon seeds is not the easiest thing to do because the shell is very light, very fine. So if you're not careful, you will break the melon seed along with the shell. And it means it cannot be used for food, can't be used for egusi. So you would have to keep breaking until you break enough properly that will be used for food. So I hated that one. I hated that one. So that was punishment. But yeah, I enjoyed dancing. I still do enjoy dancing. I enjoy singing. It's not like I'm a great singer. And I always tell people that because I like dancing doesn't mean I'm the best dancer. I enjoy dancing a lot. And I used to do that when I was small, up until now. There was something my parents also encouraged. They encouraged daydreaming. Well, maybe not daydreaming, but you know, dreaming. So on Sundays or Saturdays, we would go on car rides and we'd go to places where they were building houses or buildings. And my dad would ask if we could enter. You know, sometimes we were allowed, sometimes we were not. When we were allowed, we would go from room to room, and my dad would ask, oh, what room do you think this is? We'd say maybe the living room or the bedroom, the master bedroom. Okay, could it be designed differently? Could it have been built differently? And we used to do that as children with my parents. So that was always fun. And I always remember, I enjoy radio. I actually like radio. Especially not so much talk radio, but I miss these radio dramas that they used to do on Nigeria FM. And that's because it was also part of my childhood. So when we're driving, it would be radio we'd listen to. It wasn't any tapes or anything like that. We'd listen to radio and songs would play. There's always one particular song. When I hear it, it just takes me right back to my childhood. So radio dramas, podcasts, radio documentaries, a lot of auditory things I find to be, I find that I'm drawn to. So audiobooks, like I said, radio dramas, you know, audio documentaries and things like that, I find that I'm drawn to. And that's all from my childhood.
Fantastic. So, did you have an idea of the kind of life you wanted for yourself when you were older?
No, I wasn't. I think I just wanted to do well. You know, I just wanted to not necessarily be the best at a thing or at a career in a career, but I just wanted to do well. You know, you want to pass. And you just want to do well. You want to have good friends. You want to have good family relationships. I think that was really it for me. I knew that I wanted to have a business eventually, you know, but I also knew and know that I want to serve my country somehow. And that could be part of a business, that could be in government. I'm not sure, but those things And again, I think it's really my parents, because my mom, ever since I can remember, taught us entrepreneurship. So my mom had a poultry, and my mom used to sell Senna Cola. I don't know if people remember that drink.
Yes, I do.
Senna Cola was in wooden crates. Mm. And my mom used to sell Senna Cola. She was a nurse, and she had a poultry. And she made us have a little farm where we grew pepper and corn and beans. And she also taught us how to sell old newspapers to the malam as it was passing along. So we had newspaper customer, and we would have to pick eggs from the poultry, and we'd have to pick the peppers and the corn and all of those things. So my mom, you know, she taught us that, and that was, you know, and because again, they were civil servants anyway. Mm. They also taught us service to your country, you know, service to your country. I know there are some times when I speak with my parents, you can hear a bit of disappointment in what Nigeria has turned out to be. Mm. And, you know, my mom and dad would say, you guys, it's your responsibility. You have to change things. Mm. We're old. We ruined it. Some of us didn't know any better, but this is what we have now, and you have to, you know, I call them the last patriots. Mm. So they taught us that. They taught us service to country. And like I said, my mom taught us entrepreneurship. So in my mind, you know, it was always there at the back of my mind that, you know, I would run a business. I would own a business eventually. But I never really thought of what business it would be. Mm. I knew that I would be an employee as well, because that was what I saw modeled by my parents. You know, they wake up, they had responsibilities, they had people they answered, sa to, ma to. So I knew that, and I saw that. And I you know, when you're a child, you want to be like your parents, I guess. Yes. You know, especially if you've got good memories about them, you just really want to be like them. So I think I really just wanted to do well. Not necessarily the richest person or the smartest person in the room. Mm. I didn't want to fail. Mm. And I don't believe it. I don't believe that I will ever fail. It's interesting. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. Whether I fail, will I fail, is never in my mind. Mm. If it does not work out, if that project or that goal does not materialize, I don't look at it like I failed. Mm. I will review, okay, what did I not do well? What could I have done better? Oh, next time I do like that. But that I failed is not part of my thought process. And I don't know if that's a bad thing or if it's a good thing, or if I should find some sort of a balance.
Well,
I don't know, because
there are some risks that you take.
Well, there are some risks you take when you look back. You're like, wow, you know, what were you thinking? You were not really thinking, you know? So, so all of those things, I went to MBA, I did an MBA, and all those things, you know, feasibility study, da, 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 da. I know there are other people that will be listening. I don't do well in doing those things. So I don't do them because I will not do them well.
But, okay, so what prompted you studying economics in the university?
True story. You know that time, it was the 6-3-3-4 system. So 6 years in primary school. So you finish in form six, then you get into junior secondary school, and there you take general studies. From junior secondary school, well, the plan was that if you were not academically inclined, you would go into technical stuff. Mm. But if you were academically inclined, you go on to SS1. And in SS1, you now select whether you want to be an art student, a commercial student, or a science student. My older brother and my older sister called me and said, if you do sciences, you will fail. You will fail. I think they just knew that I didn't have the discipline for science, you know? I think they just knew. So, and that was all. That was it. All right. I did not even consider any science program after that. I just selected commercial, which was bookkeeping, commerce, shorthand, office practice, accounting. What again did we do in commerce? So that's what I did. So of course we had to do economics, business studies, all of those things. So that's what I did. And then my economics teacher, I can't believe I forgot his name, but my economics teacher was just so excited about economics. Oh my God. Wow. The guy would, I think he used to just prevent himself from somersaulting when talking about economic concepts. This man was so psyched. Everything, economics connected to everything, you know, and it was, and so with that also, it's like, okay, yeah, this makes sense. So when I was now filling out my jam, I wanted to either add actuarial science or insurance or economics. So those were the three courses I wanted to study in university. I went to OAU, Obafemi Awolowo University, for a bit in Nigeria. And so I remember filling out that form with my dad and having that conversation, because there's this big book that there's this big book at that time. I don't know if they still have the book now. Anyway, you go through the universities, you see the courses they offer, and then you now select to see what departments they are in and faculties, and then you now select. So that was, those were the three. Economics was first, followed by insurance, and actuarial science was third, because math was not my very, was not my strong point. However, I would still have to do math in any of the three. And I did well in JAMB, and I got accepted for economics. And so I did economics in OAU. Then when I left OAU, my subsequent university, I did economics there as well. And after economics, after getting a degree in economics, I thought, I'm not going to do a master's in economics.
Because why?
By senior, by, you know, my fourth year, third year, fourth year, I was like, economics is cool, but now it's getting deep, it's getting intense, and I realized that no, it's not what I wanted to do.
Studied economics. What did you do after that? What was your first job?
After economics, I went into financial services. So, right, in fact, from secondary school, there were about five of us, I think, that managed the school talk shop. So we would do inventory, product orders, balancing the books, all of those things. And all of us that were managing that shop were commercial students, were commerce in that class. So we were already doing that from Form 4. And then when I went to university in OAU, I left OAU and went to school in Canada. And in Canada, I started working at the cash office. So I was still involved in balancing books, you know, cash handling and all of that. And then I now worked in the financial services department in uni. From uni, and I worked in, so I'd been in financial services for a fair bit, I would say. So I now worked in a credit union, and that was my first job. Working after university, my first full-time job, because I'd been working through university anyway. Now, while I was in uni, I was already doing hair. Before I left Nigeria, my mom said something to me. She said, "You are going to make money." All right, just sounds as if people would just make proclamations and I just go into it. Anyway, so my mom said the same thing. She said, "You are going to make money from doing hair when you travel. You're not going to work in McDonald's. You're not going to clean. You're not going to work in the hospital. You're going to make money from doing hair." And as my mom just said it, I just started, I guess, walking in it. There was a girl who lived in our area, and she was a university student. She went to UNN. She was attending UNN. And she came around to ask if parents would allow her braid hair. And so she braided my hair. And I remember she was braiding my hair. I was just thinking that, this university student, this is a Nigerian university student. I didn't know of Nigerian university students who worked while going to school. And so I was like, she braided my hair. She braided my hair well. I was like, this thing is, I was fascinated. So what I did was I would loosen what she had braided and I would braid it back again. So I'd losing another one, I'd braid it back again. I'd losing another one, I'd braid it back again. I'd losing another one, I'd braid it back again. And in Nigeria parlance, they would say that's how my hand became strong. That's what they would say. So that's what I was doing. So my mom later on told me that I used to, because my mom used to have this elaborate, beautiful hairstyles. My mom has very long hair, and she just used to do these wonderful hairstyles. And she said that when she would remove the extensions, I would take them and I would tie a scarf on my head and tuck the extensions under the scarf and play like I had long hair, and I would style it and all of those things. So I was doing that. So when I was leaving, my mom told me that you would make money from doing hair. And honestly, when I got to Canada working as a student in school, I was also braiding hair from home. So I would braid at home. I would go to people's homes to braid. And yeah, so I was working at the bank. I was working in financial services, and I was also working in the hair industry. And I keep saying that that's all I've done. Honestly, in terms of work, that's all I've done, financial services and hair. When I moved back to Nigeria, I was working in the bank and I was still doing hair after work. When I was working in the bank in Canada, in UK, I was still doing hair after work. And it was not like, I don't know. It wasn't like, I need to get an extra job and hair is what I do. It was that this is hair. I'm doing hair. Hair is me. And I would advise people about hair. I would advise people about products and stuff like that. I was taking one or two courses, but I never looked at it like a real job. And now I look back, if I had, I probably would have gotten my hairdressing license, you know, while I was there, and maybe even gone further. But it was just always something I did. But my real job was in financial services. You know, my real job is in banking. My real job is in this. And this one I just do at the side.
Okay. So you moved back to Nigeria, you left Canada. And like you said, you started working in a bank here. So what prompted you to set up Own Natural Salon? Because it's one thing to do hair. It's another thing to actually make a business out of it. I mean, did you think about the enormity of setting up a business? what prompted you? Because at the time, I believe that you were the first natural hair salon, you know, first salon that focused on natural hair, at least that I knew of in Nigeria. So what prompted you to take that leap?
Okay, actually, there was a salon that opened in August. We opened September.
Okay.
we opened our own salon in September. There was one that opened in August. But we had been blogging about natural hair. The salon opened in September of 2013, and the other one opened in August of 2013. But we had been blogging about natural hair since 2009. And Ore, this is amazing, because a few days ago, I saw the email that my younger sister wrote regarding the blog and regarding Own Natural Salon. And the thing is, it was founded by three sisters. So it wasn't only Omozo's idea. So it was the three of us. And we were in different parts of the world at the time. And the natural hair movement, as they call it, some of us are hesitant to use the word, but anyway, that's what the world understands. The natural hair movement was forming, you know, and was gaining momentum thanks to the internet. And so my mom saw we were all, you know, natural. My older sister had dreadlocks. She had her two daughters who have natural hair and all of that. And my mom was like, oh, you know, my mom used to just throw these little things. Oh, we used to use Ori when we were in nursing school. We'll put Ori on our hair, and then we'll use thread and stretch it. And then the next morning we'll take it out and do our style our hair. So she used to send us Ori. She would send us coconut oil. You know, she would send us things and we would use them. There wasn't that much information online about our hair. There wasn't that much accurate and researched information on hair. It was really anecdotal. And so we were using that information that my mom would give us on what they were doing when they were small, when they were in nursing school. So my younger sister said, do you think we should start blogging in anticipation of Own Naturals? And this was June of 2009. So we could establish a web presence so that when we start the salon, we already have people who are following our blog and we can use that to advertise. We could make it a natural hair blog, but we could include style, parts of culture, blah, 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 blah. You know, so the plan to establish the salon was already there. So it was just how to do it. I was already working as a professional hairstylist, even though it was not full time. So we were already doing it. We were, people would ask us about shea butter, we'd sell some of our shea butter in our different locations, that kind of thing. Then when my junior sister moved back to Nigeria before I did, and so she was doing some hair meetups, really small, very informal ones at home in my parents' house. And then I moved back, and because I was already styling hair, I now started styling hair as home service while I was still at the bank. So you would meet people, oh, who styled your hair? They'd ask my sister, they'd ask me, and we'd now talk about natural hair and the whole excitement of it and all of that. And the next question is, where's your shop? Where's your salon? Where's your shop? Where's your salon? Where's your shop? Where's your salon? And we did not have one. And then we had already started making products. We're making cocoa shea, we're making our cocoa mint hairspray. So we're already making products which we're selling. And people were by word of mouth, people were buying. And people would ask, oh, so if I want to buy this thing now, what shop do I go to? What's the address? Where's the shop? We didn't have anything. So that also kind of accelerated us opening. So opening salons was always part of the plan. Now, we rented a place 1 year before we opened. And this was why we opened a year after. Because when we would share the information, oh, we're going to open it. Only natural hair. Who will come? Who will do hair? Only natural. You better add relaxing to it. Oh, you better add this. You better add that. You better add this. You know, so that was what really delayed us. It wasn't funding. It wasn't anything like that. It was just natural hair only. That decision of should it be only natural hair or should it be predominantly natural hair and then, you know, relaxed hair and whatever. So a friend of ours we've been friends since we were small, so we call her our cousin. So when we told her, she now asked us, what will make your salon different from any other regular salon if you do both hair? And that was it. That was what we needed. So we just recalibrated, went back to the beginning. This is what we are doing. This is why we are doing it. And, you know, from there, we now started getting ready, getting the space ready and everything. And the first day we opened, it was just amazing. It was just amazing. People came, people waited. I mean, we had attended natural hair meetups and we were still blogging. So people knew, we're telling them salon was coming and all of that. And we had given out flyers a few days or a few weeks before. And that day we opened, I remember it so clearly. We prayed, and there's this lady, Sister Ogo came to help us out. And we had hired stylists. We hadn't hired any front desk person or anything like that. So, and we had not priced our products.
Well, can you imagine? The product.
So somebody came in to buy. We had not. We were just doing it for the love of natural hair, or it was just for the love. And so somebody came in to buy a product. And Sister Ogo came and asked, how much is this? I was like, silence. She said, what's the price? How much am I supposed to sell it? I was looking at her. She said, Omozo, you didn't price it. MBA graduates. Omozo, you didn't price it. Former banker. Omozo, you didn't price it. I'd been doing talk shop since I was 14. How did I miss that? She just went, let me have so she looked at the invoice and just did, pop, 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 you know, just marked it up. I think she marked it up maybe 15% or something like that. And that was how. And that's how we priced the products that day. It was a good day. It was an excellent day. People came, people sat, people waited. We had giveaways, people donated, you know, products and gifts to give out. Friends came. My landlord, when we were renting the place, he said that space is too small. And we told him, oh, you know, uncle, we are just starting. We don't need somewhere too big because we are just starting, we'll grow. And so on that day, he came with his wife, and the place was full, was overflowing. And he looked at me and he told me that, I told you this place was too small. I keep saying my landlord believes in the business so much more than we do, eh?
Wow.
It's unreal. Yeah. So that was it. We had the plan years before, and we were working, you know, we were taking the steps, working in the plan. We blogged 2009 to 2013. So we blogged for 4 years before we actually opened a physical location. You know, we started with 4 stylists. Now we've moved up. We've got 14 chairs. We have a retail shop. We've got a training space, training school. We have a bridal boutique. So it's growing gradually, and we are looking forward to all the dreams we've dreamt, and the dreams that have been placed in our hearts for Au Naturals in the coming years.
Fantastic. I think I was there on your first day and I remember that the place was full.
You
I
were.
remember.
Yes, I think
And
you
it was
were.
amazing.
It
And it was
was
obvious
amazing.
that you were providing a service that so many people needed. But honestly, just seeing
Needed,
all those
yeah.
people there was an affirmation that, wow, you know, yeah, there's a natural hair
It
community and,
was,
you know, and they need quality service. They need
yeah,
people who can, you know, who know how to look after
exactly.
their hair, who will not roll their eyes and hiss when
Exactly.
you come in and unfold your natural hair.
And ask you, when are you relaxing or why you don't want to
Exactly.
relax? You know? It was so that's what we provide. We provide a hair salon where naturalistas can get their hair professionally cared for. And one of our pillars is continuous improvement. So we're always at one course or the other. Somebody has gone to learn this, somebody has gone to learn that, and when they come back, they have to share the information with everybody. Whether it's products, we have product champions, stylists that are product champions of different brands that we retail, you know, just so that we can focus, always remembering that we're people of integrity and we're professionals. We're people of integrity and we're professionals. We're people of integrity and we're professionals. Au Naturals is really just a vehicle. It's a vehicle. Au Naturals is a tool to accomplish other things, you know, and that's really what life is. You learn skills and all of those things. The skill is not this is not the end of it. It's just really something you will use to be able to do something bigger or to add your own design in this big tapestry, you know, of life, of humanity that we are in and that we are involved in. You know, it's like a quilt. So that's how we see Au Naturals. We're using it for something. You know, we are using it for something. And whether it is for people to be proud about their natural hair, whether it is to stand as advocates for workers, for employees, for even families, not to despise, you know, our natural hair, whether it is to stand as protectors, you know, stand in front of people, women who work with us, you know, against sexually based violence or stuff like that, and you know, and even to be charitable as well, because we are able to do that. We generate revenue, and we are able to now place it somewhere, you know, whether it's Mirabel, whether it is the Irede Foundation, we are able to place it somewhere where people can be helped, where people can be developed, where people can be where value can be added to them, and they can excel and they can do better. And even if that excellence is just in health, you know, even if that excellence is just in mobility, because I think sometimes we forget. We're so caught up in excellence equating to money, you know, in success equating to money. So if you don't have plenty money, then you are not successful. You know, I meet fellow salon owners who because of the training school, we're able to train them, and we're grateful for that. And sometimes when they come in, you know, they've got amazing skill. We learn. I always remember that, look, we're learning from each other. And I say too, I'll learn something from you, you're going to learn something from me. So, oh, my president, how can you be learning from me? I mean, leave president Omozomata down there. Let's, you know, face what we're doing. And, you know, so we have those people, and then some others will reach out and they will say, well, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing this. I don't know why I have not blown. Ha! And you're like, there's somebody looking at you saying, this is my super man or my superwoman. This is my Captain America, you know? And here you are, your business is not losing money, because that would, you need to review it. I'm not saying your business should lose money. You need to review it, because that's also part of stewardship. It has to multiply, you know? But what I'm saying to you is, can you stop having a narrow view of what it is you are doing? Look at John the Baptist. It was just to prepare the way. John the Baptist's role was just to prepare the way. Imagine if he was going on about, can you imagine? I was here first, yet I'm the one that even baptized Jesus, but, you know, see, everybody's following him now. Blah, 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 blah. I just missed it. Because that was not his purpose. That was not his purpose.
So I want to ask you about... So All Naturals is a dream of you and your sisters. Three sisters, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So yes. How do you manage to work together, running the salon together? Do you have roles delegated for each person? How does it work?
So remember at the beginning, I talked about us being individuals and remembering that we're working on a team, and that was something we learned as children. I think first of all, we are respectful of each other. In Nigeria, respecting an older person is a big deal. So I'm very respectful of my older sister. My junior sister is respectful of me. And then we are respectful of each other as individuals and as people who have important things to, you know, to add. So that's one. Two, because I've been doing hair, I'm left with the day-to-day running and driving the business forward. Three, my older sister does quite a bit of product development, you know. So she'll come together. We'll come together. She'll now say, okay, look, we need to make this product, make that product, make this product, make that product, so that this can happen and that can happen. And because she's also in the medical field, so we get a bit of expo. We get, you know, we get direction in that area, you know, that NAFDAC this or NAFDAC that. So she works on that. My younger sister is very big with the writing, because she's a writer, and even also with new revenue lines, so like business development, you know. So she'll be like, oh, you know what, have we considered this line of revenue generation, have we considered that line of revenue generation? Now it's important for people to remember that, or to realize that sometimes language may differ, but the concept and the idea will be the same, could be the same. So she will not speak, like when you go to Lagos Business School or whatever, they'll teach you the concepts of these things, the business, the language of business. So you're talking of logistics, and you're talking of distribution channels, and you're talking of you know. You might actually be doing all of those things, but you just don't know the framework to put them in. You know, you don't know the language to use, you know. So because of course I'm familiar with the language, that's why I'm describing it like this. But my sister does not call and say, when we are talking, she doesn't say, oh, I'm wondering if we can design some revenue streams of blah blah. No, it's just like, if we do this, sure, we can make more money. do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
We will not make more money. We need to make more money. Okay, what if we do this? What if we do that? What if we do? Okay, we need to make more money. Okay, I will think about it at our next meeting. We can discuss it. And we meet on WhatsApp. We're in different locations. And we have a WhatsApp group. We will talk, we will chat, we'll do video or we'll do voice call. Thank God for technology that we can do those things. So we're consistently talking, and then the day-to-day operations, I'm updating them if there are major issues. We've got policy and procedure down already. So if there's anything that is new that we hadn't thought of before now, I bring it to them. How far? What do you think we should do? This is what I think we should do. They'll be like, oh, yeah, go ahead. Or no, this is... And then we work around it. Are there times where... Because I'm doing the day-to-day operations and stuff, and I'm styling the hair, I'm in front, everybody sees Omozo. Sometimes, yes, I can feel that, oh, these people are not helping me, you know? And I come and I'll say, please, I need help. I need help with this, this, this. And yeah, they will go outside of their own mandate, in quote, and then everybody will put hand, you know? There is the tendency for them to say, okay, you know, let Omozo do... You know, let her move it on, and we'll just kind of support her along because she's there every day. She knows the customers, she knows the numbers more than us, and she can make those tweaks. So we have that kind of arrangement where everybody has a role to play. This is your responsibility. There is no my hand no dey there. No, your hand dey there. And, you know, we need this, we need that, we need that. So people deliver. I mean, we just had one long conversation about another project that we're working on. And again, my sister, junior sister was the one that, you know, delivered. I read the email, a part of the email where she talked about the blog, starting the blog and all of that. So so we maybe now it's time to write it down. But we have pretty clear roles. And we're respectful of each other. And we have good individual relationships. So even before O Naturals, we had good relationships. And I'm sincerely grateful for it because I know that that's not necessarily the story for people who work together with family. I work a lot with family members and not just my sisters. I have cousins that I work with as well. And look, when I'm owing them money, O Naturals has not paid, I get a message, I get a call. This is outstanding. Or, you know, they would say, ah, sis, how far this thing is outstanding. When, you know, I mean, they're not going to thank God again for a relationship. They're not going to be rude. Plus me, I'm owing. Nobody's going to send me a message that I'm going to be like, what's wrong with you? I beg, no vex. You know, this one, please just give me, you know, so that respect, you know, that respect is there. And I regularly say thank you to the people that I partner with, my family, and then other vendors that I have, you know, I say thank you. And there are times that I'll ask my sister to come in for a meeting. My older star is in Nigeria, my younger star is not, to come in with a meeting so that she can meet a vendor or meet a partner. You know, since this guy, she said, I've heard of you. You are the one, you know, helping us, that kind of thing. Thank you, Sam. You know, so it's some of those things that make it easy. Do we quarrel or do we disagree? Yes, we disagree, but I think we've done well to disagree in an agreeable manner. You know, I think we've done well in doing that. And it's okay. You know, let there be a freedom to say, no, I don't agree. I don't think we should go that way. And we all know who makes the final decision. I make the final decision. I'm the CEO. And I say, okay, this is the way we are going. And if it doesn't work out, last they say, Shebi, I told you not to do it. I say, it's true, but we did it, Sha. So how do we move forward? Again, all hands on deck. Nobody's removing hand from this plow.
Okay. That's good.
That kind of thing. And we've got shareholders, you know, so we're pretty smart about it. And I remember one of my relatives saying, whatever happens, do not quarrel over money. Do not.
So the COVID-19 pandemic and the related lockdown has forced many businesses to pivots, including providing online services. But with hair care, that is impossible. So how has Onatrals been affected by this situation, and what have you been able to do about it?
Well, with Onatrals, because of the fact that we have close contact with our customers, we actually closed a week before the official national lockdown. So, and right now, officially, salons in Lagos are not to reopen. So we have tried to find ways to serve our customers. Before the lockdown, we were offering hair consultations. We have a program which we call the hair management program. So the customer would come in, we would assess, we'd be able to achieve their hair goals. However, now we've had to kind of move a few of them online. So it's been quite interesting. So we are using, of course, online tools like WhatsApp and Zoom to be able to do it. However, it's not as frequent because it wasn't something that we were doing frequently. Our customers are taking some time to adjust to it, if that makes any sense. So quite a few of our customers actually are older. And I would say maybe technologically shy to an extent. So we have had to just speak to them over the phone.
Right,
interesting.
Right.
Speak to them over the phone. Some of the videos we've made, we've actually sent them. They will receive it by WhatsApp and watch the videos and then chat, ask questions. But to actually go live real time on video call or Zoom became a bit tricky for some of them. So that's that. Then, of course, with our customers online or our followers or our fans on our social media platforms, we were engaging with them already before now. And so we kept engaging. We had to put a bit more content than before. So we had to create content. You know, when you're in the salon, you serve 20, 50 people a day on weekends. So you're able to easily take pictures of before and after post, before and after, interact with customers. They give feedback, they talk. You know, you can do those things. But when you don't have that resource, if that's a good way of putting it, when you don't have that resource, you have to create, you know, from scratch. And that includes using, you know, your own hair, using mannequins and things like that. We are thankful that we are in the hair industry. We are in the salon services industry because there's always been this belief that the salon service is recession proof. And we are grateful for that. We've seen that and we are grateful for that. For the most part, in Africa, the average number of times a woman goes to the salon statistically is actually 16 times a year. So you have customers visiting you at least, as we say in Niger, bad as a bad, once a month. So despite the fact that we were offering this service, we still had so many customers, more than 80% of our customers, in fact, almost 100%, 80% is actually being very modest. Almost 100% of our customers still asking, when are you opening? When are you opening? When are you opening? So we already have that lineup, if I can say that virtual lineup of customers waiting to get their hair taken care of by us in the salon space. So we are grateful that we are in this business. And I'm not oblivious to the fact that there are many businesses that will not reopen once the lockdown ends. We are not oblivious of the fact that there are new people who come into the industry, with or without COVID-19 anyway. People always enter and exit the industry, and they'll come in with new techniques, new skills, initiatives and stuff. So even during the lockdown, we were taking classes online and refreshing ourselves, and we had quite a bit of the partners' products, vendors that partner with us in supplying us products who hosted classes that were free and some of them were paid. So we have to also make sure that we are providing relevant and up-to-date information to, and not just information, services for our customers as well as our followers.
I think it's fantastic how you've been able to identify new opportunities in terms of the online consultation. And I think probably when your customers get used to it, then you'll find that that will also probably really take off as well.
So, yes, I think so too. I even forgot to mention that we did some training as well online. We have a training school and there's a curriculum and all of that. And so we had to, we're still in the process anyway of translating it to a full online school. I have to say, I've always been a reluctant user of technology. I've just had to, I need it for certain things and I use it then. But this has pushed me to, I'm still reluctant, but it has pushed me to use it more frequently as a tool. And I would say it's been successful. I've had quite a lot of positive feedback. And we have Instagram Live every Tuesday where we tackle issues. We have people we interview and bring on. And you too, Ore, you've also been very encouraging. I remember the last conversation we had about podcasting. And, you've kind of poked me very, very strongly about that. So I think it's important to realize that technology, we all know technology is not going anywhere, but also to realize that even in our businesses, as much as hairdressing is, hairdressing has an aspect of it where you actually have to touch your customers, but there are also other ways that we can serve people using technology.
That's great. So switching gears, what do you do with your downtime? What do you do for fun and what do you do to relax?
It's good you elaborated on it, because when you say downtime, most entrepreneurs will be like, what downtime?
What a downtime?
But when you now pose it as what one does for fun and to relax, it puts a different spin. Interestingly enough, now this is going to almost negate what I said about not being a reluctant user of technology. I enjoy making videos for my family and friends.
Really? Videos about
I just make fun, interesting videos. My nieces and nephews are, the younger generation, they have grown up and they are immersed in it. We use our phones to take pictures of them and make videos for them. So I make all kinds of videos, from funny videos to make-believe videos, pretend, all kinds of stuff. I make for them and I send to them, for those who are older, and then I send to their parents for those who are younger, and then they reply in video. And I look forward to it a lot. I look forward to it. Then I have friends that I send maybe these 30-second videos to, maybe greeting them or just talking on a topic or, whatever. Mostly silly videos just to cheer people up. So I really enjoy doing that. I can have a whole setup, my husband has helped me a few times to produce, direct, edit, script some of those videos. And oftentimes he actually stars in the videos as well. Like I said at the beginning, I enjoy radio. I enjoy listening to radio. I enjoy podcasts. I enjoy audiobooks. I enjoy audio documentaries. I have a lot on, I have podcasts that I follow and an audiobook app that I'm almost always on, my audio Bible as well. So I enjoy that quite a bit. I enjoy dancing. So I do that.
So what's next for you personally, and what's next for O'Naturals?
Well, for O'Naturals, we realized that This pandemic opened our eyes to show us that we were getting a bit fat as an organization and that we needed to be a bit leaner. So we're actually actively working on that, reducing certain things, sadly, staff included. So we are looking at getting leaner, and we had the goal, and which was why the training school came up. But we're going to be a bit more, I think it's appropriate to use the word aggressive. We're going to be a bit more aggressive with spreading the message that natural hair is acceptable, and that as a professional hairdresser and a professional hairdresser who is practicing in Nigeria, you need to know how to handle natural hair. It should be the foundation of your skill set, the foundation of your hairstyling and hair care knowledge, how to handle natural African textured hair. And so we have plans already, which we are fine tuning to be more proactive and more aggressive about that. Then we also want to, be kind of like advocates for the naturalista in the workplace. When customers come, they talk a lot about how natural hair is perceived where they work and at home, and it's not positive. I always say that there's a lot of hostility towards natural hair, and I don't understand why. I've never been able to understand why. And there are companies in Nigeria that actually ban you carrying your natural hair as is. So you either have to use a wig or use extensions to hide it. And that's a problem, because we have young girls growing up who, their first influence is their mom. And so if the mom is hiding that aspect of her, then what message does it send unconsciously or subconsciously to the little girl? So those are the three things, and of course to grow in those, to grow in those areas. And I mean, it goes without saying, improve our bottom line, especially after all this that has happened. So that is the goal for Unaturals. And I mean, for me personally, my husband and I want to, continue our family and grow as well in that area. So that's where we are. And I'm excited about that. I'm grateful that I can have that as something to look forward to, as another blessing to expect from God. So I'm grateful and excited about that. So yeah.
Yeah, Unaturals was my first natural hair home, and unfortunately I live too far now.
I know.
I've cut my hair, so
I saw. But it's still natural though, and I'm happy about that.
It's, of course, yes. I always be natural.
Thank you so much for joining me on The Other Room in conversation with Omozogu Rombi. I hope you enjoyed this episode and picked up a few new things along the way. Omozo spoke about how she turned her passion to a business, what it's like working with family, and her beliefs on business being a platform for greater impact. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe to The Other Room on your favorite podcast app, and please leave us a rating and a review. Until next time, live your life with boldness and joy.